Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
You ready?
Suppose I'm ready.
Ready? Pop your podcast cherry.
Oh no!
Oh no! So we have Seth with us today. This is my baby brother.
Hi guys.
So we've talked about Tori and I've talked about having several siblings. There's Matt, that's the oldest. Me, Garrett, Chris, Seth, and then Tori. So
we're a big family, a big happy family.
There's a bunch of us. And Tori has still been working ever since she got back from vacation. She's been pulling doubles. So Seth actually gave me a case that he wanted to hear about. I searched and searched and could not find anything on it. But I found this one, and it was similar. You wanted, what was it, Hitchhock?
Hitchhock Mystery or something like that.
So I'm still going to have to, like, look for it and figure it out. And then once I find it, maybe I'll have to have you back. But I found this one, and it's really good. But before we dive in, we want to go over some business first. Our YouTube videos are going to be posted now, so you'll be able to actually see us on Thursdays. I put together a new introduction video. It's pretty cool. I do it so myself. It's
pretty badass. It was pretty impressive for just now starting your podcast a couple months ago.
Yeah. And then happy 4th of July to everybody. We cooked out.
It was good, too.
Had some drinks. Set off some fireworks. We tried to go swimming, but y'all left before the rain. That rain was so freaking cold. The kids stayed in the lake.
That's crazy.
Sarah and I sat on the bank and were watching the kids. And finally enough people left that we could pull our car a little bit closer and watch the kids. And we sat in the car until the rain stopped and it warmed up and we swam a little bit longer.
We were leaving. There was like a wall of black clouds that were just rolling in steadily. And I mean, it only took like 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then everybody had their big canopies up and that wind came and all the canopies just went. They were gone everywhere. And then we went swimming yesterday. The game ones were out pulling everybody over. So happy 4th. We do want to mention what's going on down south in Hunt, Texas with all the flooding. So our hearts are with you guys. I've been watching. Don't mind that. That's Hazel. She's joining us today. She's old and fat and makes weird noises. But yeah, the family's going through all that devastating flooding and all the lives that have been lost.
Yeah, prayers to the family there.
Definitely. All the girls, I know they've found a few, but they were no longer alive. I could not imagine dropping your child off for camp. And then
I'm telling you, mom was telling me that the church advisors are like the counselors or whatever, they were young themselves, 16, 17,
18. Yeah, and then the like camp director, the boss or whatever, he was found deceased. And there was one woman where she was found 12 miles from where she was because she got swept away. She was alive, but she was up in a tree hanging on until she could be healed.
That's crazy.
So hearts and prayers, everything to you guys, and stay safe. So we do have a few shout outs. So we have Brian Kramer. He's been liking, commenting. He says he's enjoying it. So thank you, Brian. Megan Kalen, which is a friend from high school. She's finally jumped on board. So welcome, Megan. And then of course our MVP, Tessa Corley Roy Croft. She's always doing the most and liking, commenting, sending recommendations. So a big thank you to her. Again, 5-star ratings, commenting on the episodes, everything helps just push it out, gets us out in the algorithm. It's really hard to get your name out there. And I've talked to a few other podcasters that have just started and they're going through the same thing. It's so hard to get your name out there when you have so many choices to listen to.
That's what I'm saying. You find your favorite podcast and it's hard to stray away from that one podcast. You just kind of go back to it.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. I really do. So I guess we can kind of jump into today's story. I wanted to ask if you had any personal experiences that you have.
So I have not had too many personal experiences. We used to live back in a trailer house out in Chandler. And I think the only personal experience I've ever had was I fell asleep one night and my closet door was shut. And I know it was shut because I keep my closet door shut. Not to call myself out, but I'm always afraid of monsters in my closet. But woke up, it was probably 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I watched the door open. I mean, could I have been asleep and maybe just dreaming it? Maybe. But when you wake up the next morning and the door's still open, it's like, well, okay, that seems pretty convincing enough.
It was a house that we lived, Josh and I, it was our first house together, actually, and I know you remember it. You walk in and there was such
cold a feeling,
cold, heavy.
It could be the middle of June in that house and it's still just
freezing. And then some odd experiences. So when we first moved in, you and Tori would not go to the right side of the house. So when you walked in, it had like a double living room. And then if you went to the right, it was a long hallway with 2 bedrooms and a bathroom. And Seth and Tori would not go down that hallway. And neither would our dog. We had a Rottweiler at the time. And he would not go down that hall. And then, again, you just felt like you were being watched. And then there was one time I was pregnant with Addie. I had morning sickness so bad with her. And sometimes all I could do was sleep it off. That's all I could do. Well, Josh was at work and I was sleeping in bed and I heard somebody talking and it woke me up. And I was like, you know, when you're kind of in that half between, you're like, was I dreaming or was it somebody talking? And then, so I just laid there and the talking continued. And then Diesel started barking and growling. And I was like, okay,
somebody's here.
And it sounded like they were on our back porch. So I got up and our window in our bedroom looked right at the back porch. Nobody was there. And as soon as I got up to get to the door, talking stopped. So I walked to the front of the house. Nobody's there. And kind of the same thing. Closets that I know were closed would be open. Mm-hmm. Kitchen cabinets would open. Like you would leave the room, you'd come back and it would be open a little bit. And it's like,
I'm the only one here.
Yeah. And I do have a husband who has severe ADHD. Yeah. He leaves cabinets open. But when he leaves them open, he leaves them all the way open. And those cabinets would only be open like
just a smidge,
just enough to notice. And it was really weird. And then, so we were renting that house from Nona Farrell.
That's right. Yeah.
So we rented from them. And I worked for them at a cafe at the same time. And I actually worked with the girl that Nona and Farrell had actually bought the house from her parents, and they had some strange experiences that they told me about in there. When she was a kid, her and her sister would be laying in bed, and they said they would see a man come to the end of that hall that you guys wouldn't walk down, and it was like a shadowy figure of a man that would just watch them, and they said it terrified them. And then somebody had rented the house before me that worked there, and she said one day she came in, it was just her and her kid that lived there, they left, door locked, everything. They come home and all their cushions were off the couch and the radio was at full blast and door was still locked. So
spooky.
That house was definitely creepy and had creepy vibes.
A little something going on there for sure.
Yeah.
They say kids, babies, dogs, animals in general can feel it a little more than, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
And that kind of explains why.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, it was wild. So today is a spooky story. We are going to be covering a haunted school. So this school is located in Farrer, Iowa. It was developed around a railroad line built in 1903, which brought a lot of growth in the region. The town was named for a railroad employee that was instrumental in bringing the rail line through the area. The post office opened in 1904, finally making Farrer an official stop on the railroad. In 1925, the population had reached a whopping 42 people.
Oh, wow. Small town. Okay.
And then it dropped slightly to 36 by 1940. Today, it remains an unincorporated community in Washington Township, Polk County. Meaning it has no formal municipal Municipal.
Municipal.
Municipal. There we go. Government. My brain's like not working. And residents actually use a Maxwell, Iowa address. It now only has 13 houses, one single church, and the old elementary school house left standing. And it also has a cemetery, which we'll get to that later. And fun fact, the speed limit sign of the town reflects the number of people in the town at 35. So that's kind of funny.
And it's kind of run. They ain't got a dollar store and Family Dollar across the street from.
Those things are popping up everywhere. So a little bit of a history of the schoolhouse. In 1919, farmer C.G., I'm going to say Geddes, I think you pronounce it Geddes, donated 6 acres of his farmland that was a central location to consolidate several rural one-room schoolhouses under the new Washington Township Consolidated School District. That's a mouthful. Could you imagine putting that on the side of the bus? Because you guys, they put like, you know, I don't want to say it, but our school district, ISD, Washington Township Consolidated School District.
It's kind of bizarre thinking they've only got 35 people in the town. How many kids could there be in the town?
Yeah.
Are they counting
the kids? Well, it's kind of taking all the rural counties, too. So it's not just that town. It's several towns around that community. And they're kind of the central spot. So they're bringing everybody to that central spot.
Right, okay.
Which the school that I met Josh at and went to for a little while, they kind of did the same thing. Coming to Oklahoma, it's a tiny school. Like, I think he had 30-something people in his graduating class. When I went there was only, like, 32 in the graduating class. Wow. So then when I came here, I was like, this school is huge. And everybody thought I was crazy because it's considered a tiny school here. And it had, I think I had 120-something people in my graduating class.
I think my graduating class was 260 or something.
Yeah, like so it's growing.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. You take a bunch of rural towns and you combine them at one to make a bigger school.
Right, right.
So the cornerstone for the new school was laid in 1921, and on April 1st, 1922, it officially opened the 17,000-square-foot, three-story school.
Wow.
Pretty big. They celebrated with an orchestra and a huge banquet. Over 300 people attended the ceremony, despite locals calling it a monument to the arrogance and vanity. So a lot of people were not happy.
About building a school in their town?
Well, it was due to the cost. So the cost at the time to build this school was $100,000. Mm-hmm. Which
that was back in the early 1900s.
Yeah. So that was a big, so present day dollar amount, just over $1.8 million.
Oh my goodness. That's in a town of 30 people.
It included modern amenities like electric lights and indoor boiler system. And what teed people off the most was indoor plumbing, because they didn't have indoor plumbing. They don't think that the
school. Now they're salty about it.
Now they're salty. Yeah. So people really just thought it was just unjust for spending that kind of money. The town even used the school as a public event space after school hours, though. They held meetings, weddings, and even a few funerals there. Could you imagine going to school the next day after you just went to a funeral there and seeing?
That's kind of bizarre.
That's a little morbid. Initially serving grades 1st through 12th, the building later transitioned into the 1950s to just an elementary school for the nearby communities. So
it's a three-story elementary school.
Three-story elementary school.
They must have grown in the years.
I guess so. This school finally closed its doors after 80 years on May 3rd, 2002. They had a banquet again just to celebrate the many years of operation. There is a cemetery directly west to the school, thought to be about 150 years old, with the oldest listed death date being April 11th, 1871.
Wow.
The cemetery is still active. They still use it. Doing the research, I did find a quote that kept coming up, and they said, the only growing population here is the cemetery. A lot of people believe that is where a lot of the activity comes from.
Makes sense. I mean, if it's so close to the school, there's got to be some
transfer over.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it wasn't growing. The cemetery population was, but nothing else. So speaking of the school and what causes the haunting at the school, it's crazy. There really wasn't any dark history in the actual school.
Except for the funerals.
Yeah, except for the funerals. They were hanging. Let's go to Miss Johnson's class where right. There's a dead body. No, thank you. So on August 1946, fifth grader by the name of Nancy Pearson was a student at the school. She was killed when she was racing her uncle on a new bike that she had just received as a gift. She was hit by a vehicle on Highway 64, and then she was buried in the cemetery next to the school. Heartbreaking. And then there was April of 1975, a boy by the name of Terry was found on farmland close to the school. His body was very decomposed. His throat had been cut by a pocket knife. His murder was never officially solved. Allegedly, many locals and family of Terry's know who did it, but are afraid to say. It is believed to be drug-related. Terry had already survived being shot multiple times before he even got murdered.
Oh my goodness.
According to close friends, he was in a treatment center and was set to be released at the end of January, but he was actually scared to leave and kept telling everybody that he was worried he was going to be murdered.
Ironic. He must have owed somebody some money or something.
I think so. They released him anyways, even though he was saying, I don't want to be released, I'm going to be murdered. They released him in January of 1975, and they believe he was killed by the end of February.
Didn't even make it a month out of rehab.
And then his body wasn't found until the end of April.
Oh, man.
Which I didn't include it in here, but my love for the ghost hunters runs deep, y'all. It runs deep, okay? Kindred Spirits has Amy Rooney and Adam Berry in it, who were members of TAPS. Quit licking yourself, Hazel. And they went and investigated the school. And they were doing EVP work. And the name Terry, what's it called? I can't remember. I'll have to look what it's called. But what they do is they put noise-canceling headphones so that you can't hear what's going on. And then they blindfold the people and they have an EVP in front of them. And then they'll have somebody else, like either in another room or maybe in that room, kind of talking and asking questions to the ghost, and then the headphones will actually play what the EVP thing is catching. And so they were doing that, just asking who's here, what's going on, and the name Terry kept coming up, and about murder. And there, so then they did the research, and that's when they found out about Terry that was killed close to the school.
So his soul's still,
and it all said, like, there was some more of the EVPs where it was almost like he's kind of like a dark entity, but maybe he's just unsettled and things never got solved. And he was kind of a dark presence. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'll talk more about Kindred Spirits later because I just love them. So as far as experiences, the school was vacant until 2006 when Jim and Nancy Oliver bought the school to bring it back to life. And they wanted to use it as an event space, like host weddings and, you know, big events there at the school, which that's a big location to do that.
Was it known to be haunted already?
Yeah. Well, kind of. They're the first ones to really
start noticing.
Experience it. They immediately began experiencing footsteps, orbs, voices, and shadowy figures. The Olivers actually lived in the building as they were restoring it. Nancy recounts that she almost fell down the stairs one day, and she felt a hand on her shoulder almost like steady her to hold her in place so that she wouldn't fall down the stairs. She turned around to thank her husband.
Nobody was there. Oh, spooky.
No, thank you. A few weeks later, Nancy seen a shadowy figure of a small boy who was in a well-lit area on the stairs going into the gymnasium. He looked like he was about 3 feet, 6 inches tall. She seen him actually walking down the stairs and holding onto the handrail. The figure froze when he noticed she was looking at him, and he just disappeared just a few seconds later. After they had been there for a little while, a psychic named Jackie just randomly knocked on their door one day. She told them that every time she drives by there, she sees a little girl in the window waving at her. Jackie offers to try and help. She wants to help this little girl move on because I guess it just really tugged at her heartstring every time she goes by, she sees this little girl. So Nancy and her sister give Jackie a tour of the building. I'm kind of showing her everywhere. And they make it to the room that Jackie had seen the little girl in. So she kind of starts her ritual of going to the light, like, except what happened, you know, trying to help this little girl move on. And Nancy's sister is kind of standing by the doorway, and she looks down the hall and sees a little girl skipping down the hallway. at the time, they were also using a voice recorder. And when they would rewind it back, they the same time that Nancy's seen the little girl skipping down the hallway, they hear a little girl giggling on the voice recorder.
Ooh.
Kids giggling freaks me out.
Right. It's supposed to be a happy thing, but when there's no kids in here.
Yeah. It's very unsettling. Jackie tells Nancy, you should open this up and let people investigate. It will help bring revenue to help pay for the restoration. So they do. They open it up and they start inviting investigators to come check things out.
She says, that's good money. People like scary things.
Yes. I don't know if this is picking her up, but she's snoring. While people were there investigating, Jim and Nancy were actually still, they were still living on the property, and they would just, like, lock themselves in their room while people were wandering around investigating.
What if all the ghosts locked themselves in there?
To get away from them? Or could you imagine sitting there and just, like, listening and, who's here with us? No. An investigator that eventually turned into a tour guide for the building came up with the idea to have a spooky prom, which that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
They began hosting prom night there, and at midnight, so until midnight, it was just like a normal prom. You dress up to the nines, dance, have fun. And then at midnight, they would go on lockdown and would begin investigating the building.
Oh, that is kind of cool.
I would go to that. Many shows have been there, some notable ones like Kindred Spirits with Amy and Adam, Sam and Colby. There are some others, other ones that have been there. I think I mentioned it later on, but one of the band members of Slipknot have been there too. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Just a tour? Was he like a paranormal investigator?
Yeah. Some other hauntings that other people have experienced, they hear footsteps, intelligent knocking. So they would ask questions, but two knocks for yes, one for no. And it would answer their questions with the knocking. Slamming doors. Oh, this one freaks me out. Old radio broadcasts could be heard through the school. When they would go into the room, there would be an old radio in there, but it wasn't even plugged in.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Basketballs bouncing, shoes squeaking in the gym, bells can be heard ringing, lockers slamming, claims of a hissing sound coming from one of the bathrooms, and children can be heard singing. Again, that's just one of those, it's supposed to be happy, and there's no kids in there, and you hear children singing. That's got to mess you up.
Just a little bit. So, let me ask you a question. Do you think maybe it's not like the kids' spirits, or maybe the people that have died on the property or surrounding areas? Do you think maybe it's just the building itself that's kind of just attached itself to the, maybe the cemetery?
Kind of. That's kind of what I think. And schools, anyways, there's such a high energy with all the kids there. Sometimes that's their happiest time, because some kids don't have the happiest home lives, and that's their escape. And maybe they pass on, and that was their happy. Or you have the exact opposite, where school is the absolute worst, and it brings that around. I think it definitely could be. One janitor named Bill Webb said he could hear people talking and walking around when there was no one there. On one occasion, he came into the gym, the lights were on, and he was absolutely certain that he had turned them off. October of 2016, a band was recording their music in the school, and while recording, the computer guy looked away from his computer for just a split second. When he looked back at it, it was turned off. It turned back on just a few seconds later, and the sound of his headphones were turned all the way up on their own. Apparitions are often seen in the school. There is an image of a small child sitting on the side of the stage. A shadowy figure is often seen leaving the principal's office. In room 206, a boy is seen leaving the closet. Voices and slamming doors are often heard throughout the school when no one else is there. Figures are often seen walking through the hall and a boy walking across the gym floor. So the third floor has been nicknamed the ballroom due to toy balls seeming to roll across the floor. So I sent you a video. So if you want to check your phone and go to the one that I labeled. I think I labeled it ballroom, and you'll have to watch it. So in this room, I think it is the gymnasium on this floor, and I don't know. I've seen countless videos of people when they're investigating, they would like set a ball on a tripod and it would be sitting there fine. They'd say, knock the ball over. And then the ball would fall off the tripod. And then this one that I sent you, this one to me was more compelling because with the tripod, if they're walking across, it could always kind of jiggle the tripod. But you can't explain this one.
I'll roll it to you, and then you can push it back.
Here, I tell you what. I'll roll it to you, and then you can push it back. Now push it back. Can you push it back? Did you see that?
Did it move?
It moved.
The camera was pointed right at it, man, so
it totally just moved.
You came to a clear stop.
Yeah, it's not moving.
Oh! Did you see
that? The camera was pointed right at it, man, so...
Yeah, the camera definitely picked that up.
Yeah, so I'll try to edit that into the YouTube video that we post. But it's two investigators. They're in the ballroom. They have a basketball. And he just kind of softly rolls it across the floor. And it comes to a complete stop. It's not moving for a few seconds. And now, can you push it back? Nothing happens. Can you push it back to me? And then you see the ball. It almost kind of goes side to side and then rolls just a little bit. So to me, that's more compelling than sitting on a tripod, because like I said, there's so many other elements that could have knocked the tripod off. But
that was clearly sitting in a settled spot and then decided to move it.
So. Yeah, so that one was wild. There's also a 9-foot-tall shadow figure known as the principal that is often seen leaving the principal's office. It is known to have a no-nonsense attitude. It almost seems to be like a principal in the afterlife. So if investigators are kind of goofing off and cutting up, it shows up and you just feel this press. You know, when you go to the principal's office, mm-hmm.
you're in trouble.
They said that feeling comes over them and then they'll see that 9-foot shadow figure.
That's spooky.
I got chills.
Was the principal actually 9 foot tall?
I don't know if that's just his, maybe he's taken on his persona afterlife and he's just...
Big man on campus.
Yeah. Shadow figures will be seen peeking around the corners and will even just show up right in your face. So you'll just be sitting there, all of a sudden, a shadow figure will be right there in your face. I would just die right there. No more. Flashlight methods are often used and have a lot of great outcome. So again, a lot of times you can take a flashlight and kind of unscrew it to where it's super sensitive to where you can just touch it and it'll turn on and turn off. So they'll use that, ask questions, how many people are here, you know, turn it off, turn it on.
And it'll flicker when
you
answer or something.
Yeah. So they have a lot of good luck with that. Many EVPs have been caught, some of them telling them to leave. There's an EVP that was caught when they had a chair set up, kind of looking at a wall, like if the kid was in trouble. And they're even asking, were you in trouble? Have you been punished here? And then they receive an answer. So I sent you that EVP.
So the other one.
Yeah. This one gives me the chills. It freaks me out.
Ever been put against the wall? Ever been put in timeout? And you can hear clear as day, like a 12, 13-year-old kid say, or worse. What happened to you? Something or worse. So you can tell something bad happened to the kids here. I mean, that's the clearest EVP that we've ever got out of this place, the or worse.
Anybody get in trouble in here and have to face the wall, get put on timeout?
Something bad happened to the kids here. I mean, that's the clearest EVP that we've ever got out of this place, the or worse.
Anybody get in trouble in here and have to face the wall, get put on timeout?
Okay.
Hold the light shift there.
That was clear.
Clear as day. When I had Josh listen to it, he almost didn't even realize that was the EVP. He was like, where is the EVP?
I mean, it sounds like a little kid just sitting next to
like
him.
Like a little boy almost. Oh, that I got chills again. I wonder
what it means by or worse.
We'll get into that. Let's see here. So a lot of successful Estes methods, that's what I was trying to think of. Estes methods is when they put the noise canceling earphones on and then have the EVP recording. It's the Estes method. People are feeling pushed. Machines malfunction in the building but work fine when they leave. There is another tall shadow man that a caretaker has seen. So this is not the 9-foot guy. This is a different one. This story is wild. He says that he has been told it is actually future him just checking up on the building. He said that he wasn't sure about that theory, though, because when he's seen it, the figure had red eyes. And when he looks at it, he would lose his hearing while he was looking at it. The figure would just fly up into the ceiling and then turns into an old man with jowls and then disappears. The caretaker said, the caretaker said, but then again, I can see myself messing with myself. One investigator went to the bathroom, and they also caught an EVP that says she's in the bathroom. That caretaker seems a little wild.
Mm-hmm.
Future
out there.
Future coming to look. But, I mean, who knows? That's crazy.
Possible.
The rumors are that one of the principals that were there abused the children. So that's often the rumors that are going around, and that's what maybe the or worse would happen.
Right.
And they also think that's why they often see a boy leaving
the
principal's office in the closet, because that's where the abuse supposedly took place.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So most of the incidents happened in the closet or the principal's office. Those are known to be the most active and dark rooms. When in the storage room, many people feel rage, anxiety, and often just start to cry for no apparent reason.
Just a lot of emotions going on.
A lot of them. Another room that seems to be dark is the boiler room. But isn't it always like
the boiler room? The basement's always going to be the scary part of the building.
People have been scratched, pushed, and hear the more aggressive EVPs there. One episode is called Ghost Stalkers. An investigator named Chad says, "My name is Chad. What's yours?" And they get an EVP that says, "God damn it, Chad."
Oh, my goodness.
He also played a recorder for them. You know, like the little recorders they have to learn hot cross buns on? He played the recorder for them and actually got intelligent responses from it. He kept trying to do an EVP session, and the recorder doesn't pick up anything, including his own voice. He tries the same one after leaving the building, and the recorder would work fine.
So it was that same thing where equipment doesn't work while you're in the building, and then as soon as you leave. Ooh.
Creepy.
They don't want to know.
They don't want you to get anything. So, Sam and Colby, you said you did you watch them very much?
A little bit. Not a whole lot, but I remember walking to the living room and mom's watching it. I mean, she still does now.
So. Yeah. Addie was obsessed. She was in love with Sam and Colby.
I'm surprised. Look where mom is.
Yeah. And they kind of remind me of the Gen Z version of Zach Baggins, just like walking around screaming and yelling and pissing things off. So they go ghost hunting. They video it. They actually have a 3-part series that lasts about over an hour long on the school. I couldn't watch them. I couldn't do it.
So too much?
It's too much. It's too corny. It's too... I'll kind of explain why in a minute. They made the series because they ended up buying the school from Nancy and Jim for $260,000. To promote them buying the building, the day they purchased it, they got the keys, entered the building, and went into a week-long lockdown investigation, and they called it Hell Week. They brought in a bunch of paranormal influencers. One was a psychic. She recommended that they do kind of like a peace treaty to show the spirits that they were there to respect them and the property. They don't. They burnt tobacco and kind of went through a ritual. During the week-long stay, they actually gave each other challenges to do while staying there. And this is kind of like my issue. If you're going there to respect them, to me, I feel like they almost make mockery of it, if that makes sense.
They could be just trying to get a rise out of them so they get something recorded.
Right. One of them went into the boiler room and they hogtied him and told him to communicate with the dark entity. That was his challenge. The other one had to actually dig his own grave and basically bury himself and then do that Estes method I was telling you about.
So maybe putting themselves in like a bad predicament would bring spirits to them or something.
It is very over the top, kind of ridiculous. But then again, you kind of see, I understand what they're doing. I maybe just don't agree with how they're doing it.
Well, they started off with saying something about them trying to be respectful.
And it doesn't seem like it. So there are several shows that covered the school. Maybe instead of Sam and Colby, go watch Kindred Spirits with Adam and Amy and Chip Coffee. They're amazing. They do a great job. I feel like they really respect the spirits, and the way they communicate with them, it's almost like they're just talking to another human being, and it just seems a lot more respectable, I guess.
Right.
So that is the story of the haunted school.
It's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder, because you didn't say there wasn't a whole lot of people that were actually killed there. It almost kind of feels like we were talking earlier that maybe the spirits from the grave that were surrounding like the area or something like that, or even just the excess amount of energy that the kids were bringing in.
Yeah.
The townspeople, because it seems like they were pretty upset about the whole building going up and stuff.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. And then you have these investigators that are trying to rile them up and freak them out. And then you have the Olivers that were going in and basically redoing everything. That's going to stir
a little bit of it up too.
So maybe it's just kind of like a perfect storm. A little bit of everything.
It's a small town too, and it's a really big building. I don't know if that adds anything to the play or not, but maybe it was just kind of like a bigger beacon for the spirits and stuff to attach to.
So that's the story. I thought it was pretty wild. Not too bad.
Pretty interesting.
How was your first podcast?
Oh, it was scary. I'm not going to lie. It's not as bad as being in school and like having to give a presentation in front of a bunch of people.
Because right now you don't see them.
Right. It's just like talking to you on the couch.
Yeah.
Woo.
I don't like editing though, because then you have to like sit there and watch yourself.
Listen to your voices.
Like a million times, and it drives me crazy.
Your voice always sounds so weird to yourself too. I don't know
if it's
with me, but.
Yeah. I keep trying to talk Josh into doing the editing, and he's like, no. Ain't doing it. So I guess that's it for this week until we can get Tori back. Like I said, I was hoping she would come today, but
she's a busy girl.
She busy. She got places to go.
Yeah, she's a young teenager.
Making that money.
Oh yeah.
Till then, I guess I'll just keep swapping you and Josh out.
That's fine.
Well, that's it. Until next time, my feral spooky friends, keep your candles lit, your alibis tight, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.